Blue White Week on the Penn State Football Podcast. Sam Freeman and Donnie Collins here from the Scranton Times Tribune. I think we're both sick, Sam. Not mentally in the head, but like I think we're physically not feeling well today. So we do apologize to the listeners here if our voices just go, because I have very little to give today. I don't know about you.
I loaded up on the hot chocolate, so hopefully I'll get through this, but we'll see.
Are you a big eclipse guy? Did you get a good look at it yesterday?
Well, so my mom sent my girlfriend and I eclipse glasses, and I made sure, you know, I tracked when the path of totality was going to be highest in our area, and we went outside to go look at it. There was a break in the clouds for a second, and we saw a glimpse of the sun. We put our glasses on, could not see anything through the glasses, and the clouds covered the sun immediately after. So it was, it definitely got darker after that, but I think that was more because of the clouds than because of the eclipse.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of darkness here. We're in Clark Summit, so it's we're higher up in the mountains, and we got a really good break in the clouds right at 3:23. So I got some good pictures of it. It's good, I guess, as good as we were going to see with what I would call 98% cloud cover, probably 99% in all actuality. So we got a real lucky break right at 3:23, but we got a couple of good looks at it. And I was really frustrated because it's really sunny here right now. We're doing this on Tuesday morning. But it's really sunny now, and I wish we had this kind of weather yesterday, and we did for a little while here. It was a really sunny morning, and then the clouds started to roll in, and I was very frustrated. And one thing I learned yesterday is those glasses, you can't see anything through those glasses. They're not at all like the old 3D glasses that we used to have at movie theaters for the 3D movies back in the day. You can't see anything through these things unless it's exactly like the right kind of brightness coming off of the sun with the moon in front of it. And I think we maybe twice got a good look at the sun through those glasses. It was pretty neat though. I'm a big fan of things like that. You know, and you know, who knows, 20 years, who knows if any of us will be here in 20 years, not to be, you know, whatever about it, but yeah, I think that's the next chance. There's even a possibility this is going to happen for us. So it was neat to see it yesterday. I was really into it, but I did get sicker sitting out there because the one thing I did notice, the temperature dropped like 10, 15 degrees. I mean, obviously the sun is 95% blocked, so it's going to get colder and darker, but I was chilly out there. I was wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, it was not a warm weekend, and I don't think that I don't think that helped us either. I would have loved to have seen more of the eclipse, but it just wasn't in the cards. I guess I'll have to plan better and hope for better weather in 20 years, like you said.
But yeah, I hope everybody got to see at least a little portion of it and, you know, appreciate what it was all about. But, you know, before we get into the Blue White game, Sam, I want to talk about something that happened late last week with Matt Zollers, the quarterback from Spring Ford, number one quarterback in the, I think maybe the number one prospect in Pennsylvania, number six quarterback in the country. And he's got his decision. He's got Penn State among the finalists. He has Georgia among the finalists, and he likes to go to Missouri. This is clearly an NIL thing. Everybody knows this is an NIL thing. And to Zollers' credit, to the family's credit, they didn't pull any punches. It was an NIL thing. And there's some good things going on at Missouri. I mean, they played in a New Year's Six Bowl last year. Drinkwitz is a really engaging guy, good offensive mind, really a good coach. They're on the rise there. But I thought this was very interesting from a Penn State perspective for a myriad of reasons, Sam. And I just want to get your kind of take on this, because number one, this is not dominating the state to not get the number one guy at a position of critical need for your team. Yeah, I don't care who you have at quarterback. You always need a top five quarterback, you might end up being a five-star quarterback out of your state. But there clearly are reasons that they didn't get him. And I don't know that, you know, you could blame you could blame the program for not being strong enough in NIL or whatever, but I don't know. I think if it's turning into a, I don't want to say a money grab, because I don't blame the kid for taking a couple extra bucks when he can get it. I don't know where I kind of stand on this one yet. I guess I think it's, I don't know if this is good for college football or bad for college football, or I know it's not great for Penn State, because I think this is the type of kid in years past they'd have gotten 100% of the time they'd have gotten this kid, but I'm not sure they finished top three for him. If you look at who was involved.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting, it's an interesting development on the recruiting trail, because you know this wasn't Penn State losing a quarterback prospect to Ohio State, you know, where they're a quarterback factory, so you almost understand losing the recruiting battle on the surface to a program like that. With Penn State and Missouri, you look at it, and I know Missouri had a good year last year, but Penn State's thing, as you said, has been dominating the state in recruiting. You know, I think last year they didn't get the number one recruit in the state by certain rankings. I know each website has it differently. But they you know, they got a large portion of that top 10, and you know, you look at this year, and quarterback is not one that it feels like they typically lose out on homegrown talent on. You know, I looked a little bit at Missouri's depth chart. I'm obviously not as familiar with their situation. It doesn't look like they have a lot of tenure in that room. From what I saw, they had a couple redshirt seniors and then a freshman. So, you know, there's a path to seeing the field sooner for him, which maybe, you know, he looks at the Penn State quarterback room and thinks that that's not a possibility anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a big example of NIL's impact. I obviously don't know what details surround his earning possibilities in Missouri, but it doesn't feel like this is the decision that would have been made 5 years ago. You know, not even just because it wasn't Penn State, but because it was, you know, a relatively smaller school on the college football stage. You know, I, again, this is where we don't have enough data about NIL and the transfer portal and everything like that. This could be a sign of when you look at college football on a larger scale. You know, I wondered if NIL might even the playing field with some of these smaller schools. I mean, I keep saying smaller schools. Missouri isn't, you know, Missouri is not tiny, but in comparison, it's not a blue blood necessarily. You know, I wondered if NIL might even out the playing field for teams like that. You know, I guess that remains to be seen. Maybe this is an example of, you know, a top rated recruit was able to land at a school that, you know, as I said, isn't a smaller school, but is perhaps a less prestigious football program than I mean, I saw Georgia offered him. Perhaps the NIL is gonna allow for opportunities like that. You know, when was the last time? Maybe it was recently. I'm not very familiar with Missouri, but you know, I can't imagine Missouri has been a hotbed of quarterback recruiting. So you know, that's something that I think we need more data on. It remains to be seen. You know, at the end of the day, I also don't know that even with this specific recruit, it's maybe not the end of the road, right? Because as we've seen, you know, guys will commit places and stay for a year, 2 years, never even see the field, and then they move on. Perhaps, you know, this will be a Julian Fleming thing. You know, Julian Fleming was a big miss, it felt like, for Penn State. He was a guy that was a homegrown talent, and you know, I certainly saw some people in the media sphere and the fan sphere, you know, saying that it was a bad recruiting miss to lose out on such a highly recruited, highly rated prospect at a premium position from an in-state kid. But sure enough, years go by, years pass, years later, Julian Fleming is wearing the blue and white. So, you know, it's one of those things where I have a hard time extrapolating too much and finding some sort of big meaning around this choice from this kid. You know, certainly not ideal for Penn State, but you know, at the end of the day, the Penn State's got a deep room. They've got a number of quarterbacks that they need to continue developing and evaluating because there's a lot of youth there. And like I said, it may not even be the end of the road for Penn State and Matt Zollers, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, because you know it could be in a year or two, Penn State needs a quarterback and Matt Zollers needs a new home, and you know what better time to reunite than that, but yeah, I don't know. For all the talk of trends and momentum and everything like that, I don't know that everything it's not indicative of some big trend necessarily.
I think you made an Ohio State point earlier. It's not like they lost him to Ohio State. It's not like they lost him to Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, and in the past, like I would think that, it's hard for me to sit here and say this is a terrible thing for college football. If Georgia was able to, we're a national championship contender. Here's a couple $1 million. Just come in and beat, see what we can do, keep you away from other people. Maybe you're good enough to start for us, whatever. I think that's worse than what happened here. But yeah, I think it's, to me, it's more interesting that he chose Missouri over Georgia, because it's not like he went to the SEC and just took SEC money. He went to Missouri. So I think it is a, I don't want to say a good thing for college football, because I think the regional nature, I guess is the word I'm looking for, of the sport for decades and decades has been what has really made it popular. I mean, if you're a Pennsylvania kid, you went to Penn State or you went to Pitt, or you're a New York kid, you went to Penn State or Pitt, or if you're an Ohio kid, you went to Penn State or Ohio State or Michigan, or things like that. You didn't see too many Texas kids go to Boston College, or too many Los Angeles kids go to Miami. It just didn't happen that way. It was kind of a high school feel to it, on a bigger scale than what we're used to now, which is basically, if Penn State didn't get Matt Zollers, they'll just go to the next guy. They'll go to the guy after that, and there's not really a humongous difference between those guys. And look, I'll be honest with you, Sam. I don't really want to hear it from Penn State fans, because they got a five-star guy and they don't like him.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
what do the ratings matter, really?
well, and in a weird way, it's been a long time since this feels like it's been the case. But you know, the positive case for NIL, like you said, is some of these smaller schools maybe have a better shot at getting some of these highly rated guys as opposed to the bigger schools that don't need them. But you know, right now, Penn State kind of is one of those bigger schools that would just be adding a quarterback to the and adding an extra Infinity Stone to the gauntlet. It's, you know, they have a lot of Drew Aller is the veteran in that group. And Drew's not that old, not that seasoned. Penn State would be adding a top-rated quarterback to just sit the bench. So I mean, this is sort of what the NIL was meant for, as well as obviously, you know, making kids money, but so who knows? I, like you said, I don't know that it's bad for college football. It's certainly not great for Penn State, but
Not
it's
great for
great for
Georgia
Missouri.
either. Not great for Georgia. And look, I mean, you said it, or you hinted at it. I don't know if you outright said it. I think you did. I mean, he could come right back to Penn State in a year if he wanted to. I mean, who's stopping him? Nobody. He doesn't. I mean, doesn't have to sign with Missouri for that matter. But he can go take whatever Missouri's offering and then come back and, play for Penn State as a sophomore. He could do it. I think there's some bad aspects to NIL. And none of them for the players, because the players financially benefit in ways they never have. And maybe this is history being leveled out, I guess. I don't know. But if you look at, I mean, let me ask you this question, and I don't know if I have a great answer for it, but I'm going to ask, which schools are benefiting? Which ones are clearly benefiting from this? And I think the only one that really jumps out at me at the top level is Ohio State. I mean, you're looking at Missouri benefiting here. Louisville has benefited a little bit. Who else? Who it's most I think it's mostly some of these smaller schools. I mean, Duquesne's probably going to get Bronny James if you want to extend it. Like
I mean, the one that came to my mind first was Colorado. You know,
Colorado.
I it's you know, and I know that's a it's maybe a little bit of a contentious choice, but you know, and there's a lot going on there, and a lot probably has to do with the transfer portal as well. But there's a reason why Colorado has pretty immediately turned around its, let's say, recruiting pull. Obviously, the performance on the field maybe needs a little bit more time, but you know, and part of it is probably Dion's magnetic personality and everything like that. But why are kids going to Colorado? You know, it's a big deal. It was a big storyline last year. For the first 5 to 6 weeks of the season, it felt like it was the only team that was being talked about. So I can't imagine that didn't pay off in NIL funds for at least the important players on the team, the marketable players on the team. And you know, that wasn't the case before Dion and before NIL. I have to think that he's the, not to make this all about Dion now, although he might like that. You know, it seems like the perfect marriage for a coach that runs their program like that.
I think the argument could be that even more than Colorado, Jackson State benefiting
Yeah,
because
with
they
Travis
got,
Hunter.
yeah, Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders. I guess those are guys kind of, well, Sanders kind of an undervalued guy on the recruiting trail, but Travis Hunter wasn't. Yeah, for him to go there, and he got something to go there that everybody knows that. So, yeah, I think Colorado getting those guys is a product of Dion. But I think Jackson State getting them is a product of Dion and the money. I just think we're at a point where kids aren't looking at recruiting and to a degree, parents, I guess. Parents and kids are really in this together. Parents aren't looking at it the same way that parents used to look at it in the past either. It's this is now a let's cash in when we can cash in. And I don't blame them. Trust me, sending a kid to school is expensive. Unless you're getting that full ride. It's expensive, and you're sending them even with the full ride with the, everybody believes their kid is the best player, whether they are or they aren't. Everybody believes that. Everyone believes their kid's going to the NFL or Major League Baseball or the NBA or whatever sport it is, and you're sending them there on a full ride scholarship, which it's a tremendous, tremendous thing to not have to worry about that education financially as a parent or as a student, but definitely as a parent. But you're also sending that in, you're looking at it as an investment now too, in a way. And I hate to say that about a kid because I don't think any parent would admit that they think about it that way, but that's really how they're doing it. And you're sending them there with only the full ride scholarship, and you could lose millions with an injury. So I don't know where I was kind of going with that, but I think that's why they're looking for that. Definitely why they're looking for that little bit of extra and why they're getting it in certain spots from these schools. But it is, I think when you look at this rule being implemented a couple of years ago, you're thinking, oh, the stars are going to really benefit from this. But I don't think people really realize how much the high school stars are going to benefit from it.
Well, and something you said that really stuck out to me was just the shifting in how the players, the prospects, and the families of them view recruiting. Because I think all of that has changed with NIL. And I think you're right. Not only the focus on money, but the NIL mixed with the transfer portal makes it so, you know, I hate to be I hate to use this cliche because I don't like cliches, but you know, people point out that commitments aren't commitments necessarily anymore in college football. It's until they're signing, they're not a part of the program. You can't necessarily count on that commitment. And I know that's it's kind of always been the case, but it feels exacerbated now. You know, Penn State is not going to drop out of recruiting Zollers. I would doubt that. You know, they could put something together to sway him. And I think that's easier to do with extra money. But then additionally, with how people view the initial recruiting, I gotta think that players and families think of it as less stressful, lower stakes. Because, you know, to use a an extreme example, Quinn Ewers goes to Ohio State, plays what, two snaps, and then is now a Texas blooded guy through and through. And you know, I just feel like had there been no transfer portal or anything like that, and there was just NIL, I still think the recruitment process is a little bit, I mean, it's always going to be stressful, but there's a lot to weigh on the part of the player and the family. Yeah, we could take this money now and it's straight up and it's no strings attached and it's great. It's life-changing money. But then maybe my development is going to be stunted. Maybe I'm not going to go to the NFL because I take the money now and go to this school. Maybe I need to find a school that's better suited for me. But with NIL plus the transfer portal, there's absolutely no reason not to just take the money. And if it's not working, go find somewhere else because there's nothing stopping you from going to a better situation after you've cashed in. And you know, if Zollers makes a ton more money at Missouri these first couple of years and then decides, well, I'm not getting the development I want. I really want to play on Sundays. I got to go somewhere like Georgia. You know, if the door is going to be open at these big schools and there's nothing stopping him from entering. There's certainly something to be said about being in the same program for a long time. But you know, if you need the money, or well, let's be honest, even if you don't necessarily need it, it's hard to say no to six figures at 18. I certainly never had that that presented to me on a silver platter. It's hard to blame people for taking it, especially when there's a backdoor built into the system.
I'd never turn it down. Never. But I had this discussion with somebody in college because it was somebody who I was working with at the Collegian at the time. And he, I think it might have been Arrington, left school early. And he said, it's a shame that these kids don't stay in school 4 years anymore. They really, really should. We have to. And it's like, yeah, but if somebody came up and offered you $10 million to go work in the field you're studying to be in, you'd take it. You wouldn't stay for the education. You'd take the money. The money is life-changing money. And yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, whatever I think of any of this and how it affects the game. And I just look at it from how is it affecting the game, the product on the field, what fans have always loved about it, what it's going to be in the future. Because I think if the game is not healthy, if it doesn't make the game healthy, then what are we doing? And I'm not sure this all makes the game healthy. I think it's a way to make some money, but if people stop paying attention to it, who cares, really? But I don't foresee that happening. From a professional standpoint, you take the money all the time. Every time you take the money, I mean, you have to. And then sometimes it's, I'll give you 1.5 million or whatever, and they'll give you 1.4, and then you have to decide which situation is really better for you or whatever the numbers are. I'm thinking more of a professional contract there, but then an NIL, obviously, I'm not sure that much money's going around consistently. But one of the things I always enjoy hearing from older players is the story of how they ended up going to the school that they went to. And Mike Munchak and Jimmy Cephalo both told me their stories, and it was similar. And it's so you'll never hear the story again because it just doesn't happen anymore. But like to the point of how much the role of parents and kids have changed in this and the recruiting aspect of it. Munchak told me that he had called, I think it was Dick Anderson at the time. This is, I mean, it's early 80s. It might have been Dick Anderson, but I don't know who it was. I don't remember the assistant coach he called, but he, you know, obviously a great Penn State player, went on to the NFL, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, great career with the Houston Oilers. But Mike told me that, you know, we had called Penn State and told him I wasn't going. So he comes back home. I forget where he said he was going to go. He comes back home from practice one night, and who's sitting in his kitchen but Joe Paterno, and his mother's making him an Italian meal or something like that. And at that point, Mike was going to Penn State, and it wasn't necessarily Mike's call. It was mom's call. Joe used to recruit the parents, and that was his whole deal, that he would go in and just recruit the parents and say, hey, here's what we could offer from an academic standpoint. Here's how we develop kids. But rest assured, we're going to take care of your kid. He's going to become a man here. That whole story. And then I heard from Cephalo, and it was kind of the same. Those are two local guys who Obviously, everybody around here would know, went to Penn State, but Jimmy Seffel is from Pittston, went to my high school. He said the same story. He comes home and there's Joe Paterno eating a freaking meal in his house. So, they don't really have a decision at that point because the parents are sold. But now, even if the kids want to go in one spot, the parents have a say on what the money is, whether there's money necessary or not. I think there's a lot of similarities between James Franklin and Joe Paterno that Penn State fans would love to ignore. But yeah, I can't, because I think that's James's recruiting pitch now. Come here, we develop kids, we make you a better athlete in the weight room. We will be competitive on the field. We will get them to the NFL. We have a track record of that, and we'll take care of them. We'll make sure they graduate. We'll make sure they're academically sound. We'll make sure they're taken care of. And I think it's kind of the same recruiting pitch. And I don't know that Penn State's ever going to be, and I think James has said this a couple of times, I don't think Penn State's ever going to be a big NIL school. They have to be an NIL school, an NIL program, but I don't think they're ever going to be a huge one. I think we are going to see some huge NIL programs, though. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And we've talked about that ad nauseum. I think the Jordan Addison to USC thing, great for Jordan Addison, but he didn't play great out there. Pitt was a much better fit for him than that offense, that scene, much better thing for him than USC was. And I think some schools kind of looked at that and said, you can't just go and plug and play here. So you got to be smart with it. And I think Penn State's kind of on the smarter side right now with NIL. But I really question how big they're going to be in outbidding other teams, even for in-state kids.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a reason to, you want to win recruiting wars, but there's not a reason to empty out the savings to, well, I was using that as a metaphor, but I guess that's a with NIL, that's a real thing.
Yeah,
But
it is.
not we sort of talked about it earlier. It's not the end of the world. No individual recruiting battle is the end of the world. So you don't really have to go all in anymore, because you, or I guess it depends on how you look at it. Maybe you view all in as, we're going to keep Zoeller's phone number on speed dial for the next 3 years. That's certainly possible. But what I mean is, losing the initial commitment isn't even the end of the road with this player. But it's certainly not the end of the world, end of the road with this recruiting class. There's a lot of time for them to continue building it out, and there's a lot of talented kids in the country, and sometimes you just have to take your lumps and move on to the next one. Keep the door open, but I don't know. It's certainly an interesting landscape, and I feel like I say that pretty much every week now, but we're learning more and more about the new system as news comes up. I think there's takeaways that you can snag from each decision, each bit of news, that helps us put the larger puzzle together.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how you put teams together if you're not going to outbid everybody for, the best players you could possibly get. And I think it's kind of this, I call it the travel sports mentality, where you see coaches, quote unquote, just go get the best athletes they could find and put them out there and see how it goes, and just collect, just do this big collection of who are the best kids at this age group and whatever, and we'll put them together and see if it fits, how it fits, whatever. But I think there's certainly another way to do this if you're Penn State. And are they going to get a really good quarterback in this class? Yes, they are. I'm not worried about that for Penn State at all. They're going to get really good players. They do a good job recruiting, but I think it's going to be teams putting more emphasis on fit and more emphasis on system than we've seen in the past. And one, you could just go out and get people, and Saquon Barkley becomes your system. So I think it'll be a it'll change the game in certain ways for certain teams, but I think it does kind of spread out the talent a little bit too, and I don't know if that's a bad thing. Sam, we'll be back in the second half to talk about my favorite game of the year, the blue white game. We'll be back in a moment. Sam, the blue white game, I think it's 2 p.m. on Saturday at, of course, Beaver Stadium. It'll be, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be for Saturday. The weather's later in the week is supposed to be miserable again, with rain here. But I think Saturday is going to be okay, but chilly at the blue white game. So you going? You gonna be out there?
No, I have to I'll be on the desk on Saturday.
Yeah, it's one day of the year I wish I was on the desk. No, in all seriousness, I just got my notification from Penn State about the parking pass for the game, and it just reminds me of how crazy that. And I always look at the media procedures, which haven't changed in 15 years, to see if there's any changes, and there's none. But I always go over them, like, oh, see if there's anything different, and of course there's not. But blue white game always has a. Has a different feel, Sam. And we talked a little bit last week about some of the people we're looking at in this game, and I think I kind of would like to continue on that. It's a game where you look at Drew Aller, the quarterback's big game for them. I mean, it's going to be a lot of Bo Perbula in this game. You're going to see Grunkemeyer for the first time. You're going to see some of those freshmen for the first time, and I think. The first Drew game, we were very excited to see Drew in the blue white game. You look at the freshmen now. Who are some of the guys you're looking forward to seeing in this game? And I know we talked about some of them last week. Quentin Martin, mentioned in the first segment. He was one of the guys who was, I think, one of the myriad of guys who was named a top ranked prospect in the state last year. But there's so many newcomers on this team, and I think there's a couple of them I'm looking forward to seeing. He's one of them. But who do you got at the top of your list of guys you're really looking forward to seeing?
Well, I mean, I talked a little bit last week about, I'm always interested in the offensive linemen. So, I don't know if they're at the top of my list, but certainly, the young guys from last season, as well as the new ones coming in this year. So, guys like Cooper Cousins and Alex Birchmeyer, Anthony Donka. To me, I with especially with the way that Penn State has both recruited and developed offensive linemen recently, which is a relatively new development with the program, I'd say. That there could be some stars hanging out among the second and third team offensive line. It's certainly no knock on the first team. It's just there's a ton of talent there. There's a surplus, which that's probably the hardest position I'd say in at any level of football to have a surplus of talent at. There's never enough competent offensive linemen. So I'm really interested to see how the new guys perform in their first collegiate action, but then also how some of the younger returners are developing. Do they look the same they did last year? Or do they look, obviously they're all going to be bigger, but do they use that weight well? Or are they just a bigger version of the same player? It'll be, to me, that's interesting because as I said last week, the defense isn't just going to roll over for the offense. They want to win reps too. They want to fight for their spot on their depth chart. So it'll be, to me, that'll be very interesting.
Yeah, I don't want to watch the blue white game once, never mind twice. But I will watch it twice to see some of these guys, and especially in the offensive line. Donk is one of them that I think this could be a really big game for. I thought he was really impressive in the Peach Bowl. He's one of the guys who went in and a game where those young guys got a lot of chances to play and didn't necessarily always play very well. I thought he did. I thought he went in and it kind of exceeded my expectations. So let's see if he could take another step here. Because if he can, he's going to compete for starting role. I truly believe that. Because who knows what Drew Shelton is injured. Obviously not going to play in the game. Had a surgery. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter if Drew Shelton plays in the spring or not anyway. I'm sure it's nice to get the work in, but the spring game doesn't really mean all that much to him right now. So I think, moving forward, he's a guy who's going to play, but I think that other spot's open. I think there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching there to see what the best fit is. Does JB Nelson kind of fit in a tackle or guard? I thought he had a better year last year than he probably got credit for at the end. But yeah, I think if I'm looking offensive line, Rucci is a guy I want to see. And I'll watch the game again to see Rucci and Donko to see what they did. Javon Williams, I guess. I don't know. I know he's a five-star kid, great athlete, unbelievable athlete coming in there. But I don't know if I see him as a starter this year. But maybe he comes out and dominates in this game, and you start thinking about him that way because he plays a spot where I think he's a guard personally. But you look at what they have at guard, I think it's they have a it's plentiful right now. The depth at guard. So I'm kind of going to look more at the tackles. Oh no, maybe. But yeah, I'm really looking at Donko and Rucci, who fits in there, kind of alongside Drew Shelton when this all starts. Another guy that I really want to see this week is because I think this is a guy who I think they believe is going to make a bigger impact on the team than I believe he's going to make is Julian Fleming. And I know he's going to make a big impact from a leadership perspective. They needed this kind of guy who's been around the type of players he's been around over the years, who is as polished as he is. I don't know if he's dynamic. They need someone dynamic at that position. I don't know if he's dynamic, but I'm looking forward to seeing him in the blue-white game to see maybe if he could be. Is this a guy who is going to come in and be a better player at Penn State than he was at Ohio State? I think if he comes in and is what they thought he was going to be years ago, he can make a really big impact. Now, I think that's putting a lot of pressure on him. I think that's revisiting an expectation that probably wasn't realistic 5 years ago. But I think Fleming could be a big player for Penn State this year off the field. Could he be one on it? And I don't know if we see that in the blue-white game, but maybe we see some glimpses of that. And I think we could see some glimpses of that in how much of a target is he for Drew or for Bo? Do they kind of rely on him in this offense, or do they still rely more on Keandre and Trey Wallace?
Yeah, and there's a handful of young guys in that receiving room too. They have the possibility of completely revamping that receiver room this coming season. I mean, like you said, if Julian Fleming is who they thought he was, they might be set at receiver. Now, I agree with you that initial hope about who he might be is probably long gone because it wasn't fair to begin with. But I'm if only because it's a little bit surreal, it will be interesting to see Julian Fleming at the spring game for starters. But then there's some guys in there that I'm not convinced will compete for playing time this year. But like Carmelo Taylor and Mekhi Flowers flipped to wide receiver, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. I'm always interested in the guys that switch positions because, it's soon after that Mekhi has changed positions, but it will be interesting to see what's there, I should say, because it sounded like this was a request by Flowers to change positions. This wasn't something that the coaching staff just organically decided. So it'll be interesting to see what juice is there. Like I said, it's unfair to judge him on how he's progressing as a receiver, X amount of weeks into that change. But it'll be interesting to see, what's there? What does the ceiling look like for him?
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to see much out of him other than him playing wide receiver. And I think that's a big enough deal in and of itself because they needed some help there. But yeah, I don't know that in how many, 15 practices, 14 practices, whatever it's going to be, that we're going to see the real byproduct of that move. But it will be interesting to see that, and I'm sure we'll see some other things that we, haven't seen or didn't necessarily expect. But yeah, I mean, getting back to Fleming is who he is, good enough. And I think to a certain degree, if we're going to look at Fleming and see what more of an impact could he make, you have to kind of also look at Keandre and say, what more of an impact could he make? And Drew was talking, I think last week, and he said that when he was asked about Keandre, he said his consistency has been really good. And I think if Keandre is consistent, that's a big deal, right? Because I think that's the knock on Keandre, right? He's not consistent. Look at his second half last year compared to his first, and then look at his middle of the season in 2022 compared to the start and the finish. So yeah, he's got to be able to put it together. But I think there's some, I think consistency is a key word with the offense this year, because we heard it a lot with Drew. And James said it last month when he was asked about Drew, what's the one thing you want to see better? And it's consistency. I mean, and it's not like I don't think it's a one thing that he has to do more consistently. I think it's just playing the same kind of game you play against Indiana, against Ohio State. I think that's really what James meant, because if you look at excuse me, if you look at Drew's numbers last year, he's way under 50% passing in the three losses and over 65% in the wins. I mean, there's a disconnect there, and I don't know what you look for in a blue-white game to see consistency, because I don't think that's really what this game is going to show. I think it's yeah, it's. But I think there maybe are little things you could see with Drew, or little things you could see with the receivers, especially since we're kind of looking at those two as kind of positions that Penn State really needed to look at coming out of last year and say, we need better out of these two spots. So yeah, I think I'm looking at kind of the guy, Fleming, those couple of linemen. I think Khalil Dinkins. I mean, maybe not in a blue-white game per se, but what does he bring? Because there is a that is a big job to fill. I mean, you're however you look at Khalil Dinkins, he's replacing either what Warren was last year or what Theo Johnson was last year. Not easy to do. They have a lot of talent at tight end, but is it going to translate into the kind of production they've had in the past? I don't know, but I do know if it doesn't, they need those receivers to play better. And I like those younger receivers. You Carmelo Taylor, smaller guy, but he's really, really fast. He could take the top off of defenses. There's a couple of guys in the freshman class, I think, that are potentially really, really good players. But right now, we don't, and we're not going to know after Saturday. I mean, if you're walking out of the blue white game feeling better about the receivers, you're probably setting yourself up for disappointment. You want to walk out of the West Virginia game feeling better about the receivers than you do walking out of the blue white game, because everything could change in a couple of months anyway. But I think you want to see some hope for cautious optimism out of that group. But I don't know what they could do in this game that would lead me to think that you're seeing cautious optimism. I mean, outside of Fleming being really good. I mean, and I don't know that that's fair to expect. And I'll tell you a story about Fleming that our colleague Joby Fawcett, the indomitable Joby Fawcett, who knows everything about two things, and that's high school football and track and field, because he was a star in both of those during his high school days. But I'll tell you a story about Julian Fleming. He watched they played, I think it was Lackawanna Trail, in the state playoffs in Fleming's senior year, junior year, one of them. And he told me, this is after he'd committed to Ohio State, he told me Penn State dodged a bullet on Fleming
Interesting.
because he wasn't fast enough. He said he's not as fast as Derek Moy, because he had seen Moy at, I don't even know if Joby remembers this, but he probably does. I've reminded him enough about it, but he saw Moy at state track. Maybe it was state track he saw Fleming too. But he said he saw Moy at state track and knew he was fast enough to play at Penn State, but he didn't see that from Fleming. And I think it kind of manifested itself at Ohio State. He was a good, serviceable receiver surrounded by great talent at that position at Ohio State. But he's not surrounded by as much great talent, so maybe he'll look better. Maybe we'll see a different Fleming, a more impactful Fleming than he could have been at Ohio State. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see that again on Saturday, but I think that's the one guy who, if he plays well, I think Penn State fans will feel really good walking out of there.
Well, and for all the questions about the receivers this past season, when you look at the roster, I don't know that the hierarchy is in question. We have a pretty good idea of the receivers that will be at the top of that room. The questions are more about how will they perform. You know, I don't know that you're going to go into the spring game and discover some hidden gem receiver that's been waiting among the bunch. I think there's a lot of young guys that can develop into talented players, but they're either not there yet or there's not a path to the field. I think that room is pretty set. It's just a matter of, will those established players step up in the roles that they're expected to take? But because of that, on the flip side, I think the cornerbacks will be an interesting watch this weekend. We have an idea of who might be out there for Penn State, but I would be shocked if that's set in stone at this stage. There's still a lot of time for a guy to step up and really cement himself as a, you know, there's certainly Cam Miller and Zion Tracy played a lot, but you know, especially towards the end of the season. But none of them really stand out as a dominant force. You know, there's not a Kalen King stepping up as the immediate veteran leader in that room. Like I said, I suppose Cam Miller, but we haven't seen a ton out of Cam. And so for me, it'll be interesting to see how these corners go up against the Penn State receivers. And I know that you could easily flip that and say, well, the Penn State receivers underwhelmed last year, so how are you really going to tell how the Penn State corners are going to do if they're clamping down a group of potentially underwhelming receivers again? But my point in bringing that first bit up about the receivers is we know who the main contributors in the receiver room are going to be. So that's a pretty good gauge for, you know, if there's a corner at the spring game who does a great job clamping down Keandre or clamping down Trey Wallace or clamping down, you know, Julian Fleming, that's a pretty good clue as to, well, they should probably see the field a little bit more this coming season. They should probably be at the head of this bunch. You know, if a guy is doing a great job, you know, I'm just going to just throw a random name out, but I don't want to take a shot at some random receiver for no reason. But you know, if a corner is shutting down a freshman receiver or something, it doesn't tell you a whole bunch about their quality and how that projects for September. But it'll be telling to see who, number one, they match up against these receivers, who gets the first team reps, but then who actually has the success against, you know, the presumptive starters on Penn State's offense.
Yeah, I agree with all that. You said something I don't necessarily disagree with, or don't necessarily agree with, that there's no potential breakout star here that you're gonna. I mentioned Fleming, and I think I was mentioning him for a different reason. But let's say Omari Evans has 100. And people forget Omari Evans. He's had some big moments for Penn State. You know, a guy like that comes out and shows like, this spring has been. And look, we haven't heard much about him, quite frankly, and I don't know why, but just to mention him, you know, if he comes out and looks like he's gotten a lot better, I think that's potentially a guy who could take you to another level. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I like Josiah Brown, the freshman. I don't know if, you know, shutting him down is really going to be something that makes me think, wow, Elliot Washington's really good. But you know, I think, you know, you look at you bring up an interesting point when you look at those cornerbacks, because the one thing they don't have any experience right now at cornerback. Yep. And they've had it they've had really good veteran leadership there, and guys who've played a ton. Even when Joey Porter Jr. was in his first year, Tyree Castro Fields was in his 15th at that point. So they have a lot of guys who, when they were putting in, when they were breaking in a younger player like a Kalen King or a Joey Porter Jr., they had a veteran guy on the other side. They really don't have that this year. I mean, honestly, I should be fair. Cam Miller's in his third year. I guess, yeah, I guess Cam Miller qualifies, really, but
But I mean,
Kimber's in his
he's
third year
that
for a
makes him
different
kind of the
team.
oldest guy in the room,
Yeah.
which is it's odd because, like you said, it doesn't seem like, now again, it's not a shot at Cam Miller, but
No.
it doesn't really feel like he's a veteran because he's been behind Porter and King and Hardy and Dixon, and it's, yeah, he's in his third year, but what does that mean?
Yeah, I'm looking at the cornerbacks. I'm going through the roster here just to make sure I have the guys on the. I don't want to forget anybody, but Kimber's a senior, so I thought he's a little older than I thought. But Harris is in his second year, Miller's third, but everybody else is, John Mitchell's a freshman, Zion Tracy second year, Washington second year, Belgrave Shorter freshman. Adavian Collins third year, but only second in the program. And I think, you look at it that way too sometimes. These guys who are, Kimber, I guess it's his fifth year, but first in the program, it's not really a veteran guy. It's a guy who is a veteran as a player, but not in your program. So I think Penn State kind of looks at it a little bit differently than maybe the numbers would indicate you should look at it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the cornerbacks are doing. Let's look at the defense. Linebackers, you don't worry about. They have a million of them. Now, do they have a lot of experience there? No. But Rojas, you don't worry too much about him going in there, or Dom DeLuca going in there and replacing Carter. As good as Carter was, I mean, you look at Dom DeLuca's numbers last year in limited time on defense. He was great. I mean, his numbers were outstanding. He impacted plays. He made a lot of stops. I think Rojas it kind of fits in that mold. But Wiley's a good player. Tamir Robinson, they're raving about. You got a lot of linebackers who you can look at and say, Keys, another one. You look at those guys and say they're going to be able to work with what they have there. Defensive end, they got a lot of guys, and now they have Carter. Defensive tackle, they have guys. I think they're kind of a little bit underrated there, in fact, that they're going to be okay at defensive tackle. Safety's obviously very good. But cornerbacks, there's questions. And I think in the blue white game, I think the one thing you do is you look at where the question marks are at, and everybody kind of focuses on them. But you have to take it with a grain of salt, because as we said last week, they can manipulate the questions a little bit and minimize them and get the answers they want. But I don't know that they're going to do that in this game. I think they have to challenge some of those guys. And when you see the questions going head to head, you don't normally get to see that. Because look, the receivers have been questions before, but the cornerbacks have not. The offensive line has been a question before, but the defensive line has not. The quarterbacks have been maybe questions in the past at times. But the backups are not. So there's no real competition there. So you this is a spot where I think you could have jobs on the line. And I don't ever look at the blue white game as a spot where you could win a starting job. I don't, because it's still 4 or 5 months before you're really going to play a game anyway, a game that matters, in the standings anyway. So I think you look at it in that sense and think, well, it's a true exhibition game that sets up for what they might expect to see in the summer. But I think this is one of those rare years where, especially cornerback and receiver, you could see something come out of here that sticks. And I don't know what it's going to be. I don't have a, outside of, maybe Omari Evans playing well, despite not getting mentioned at all this spring. Maybe they're keeping that under wraps. Maybe he's playing very well. I don't know. Or but the corners, we don't know. We don't know what that's going to look like. Would you be surprised if the starters were Zion Tracy and Cam Miller.
No, I certainly wouldn't be surprised. I feel like that's the it feels like that's the way they're leaning right now. I mean, I say that with no information. I just mean from experience on the field and experience in the program. I mean, I guess maybe you throw Jalen Kimber in there because they sought him out for a reason, but I don't know that that's who we'll see in September. I think that's probably who you got to expect at this point, but again, it doesn't necessarily mean I don't know that that means much right now.
Would you be surprised if it was Elliot Washington and AJ Harris?
No, I
No,
wouldn't be
I don't.
surprised.
Yeah, I don't think there's any combination of about five guys that would surprise me as starters.
Yeah, I
I
mean,
just don't see it.
I know they've talked a lot about Cam Miller in years past, so I might be a little bit surprised
If it's not Cam.
if he wasn't among that starting three if you throw a nickel corner in there. But my surprise would not be that wouldn't be the I don't know that I'd really be that floored. It'd be one of those things where you look at it and go, oh, wasn't expecting that. Anyway, especially with a new defensive coordinator, who knows? Maybe Cam Miller was a great fit for Manny, and then Tom Allen comes in and it's just not the style of defensive back play he wants. I'm not saying that's the case, but you never know. I mean, this hierarchy could get shuffled around when there's not somebody established. And to jump to Omari Evans real quick, I know it's a little bit off topic, but he's going to be fascinating. I didn't even think about him in the receiver room
You forget
because
about him.
he showed flashes his freshman year, but then it was like he wasn't even on the team last year. I don't know, and maybe in Code Unlicky's offense, with how creative he is, perhaps there's a better use for Omari Evans this year. But I wish I knew why he wasn't on the field last year, because it didn't to me seem like he seems too talented to not know what to do with. Not that he's some world beater, but you get the ball in his hands, he could make something happen. And he didn't play. It wasn't even that he didn't get touches, he just didn't play. So, the fact that they're still not really talking about him, maybe they're playing it close to the chest, and it's, why reveal things that you don't want to reveal? But I don't know, it's a bad trend, I think, for him. That would make me nervous.
Yeah, I think there was something with Yurcich last year where he didn't like what he. From what I gathered with Yurcich, there was a kind of this thing where he was only going to put his guys out there who understood his offense and did everything to his satisfaction. And I don't think Evans was one of those guys. And in Yurcich's defense, there's a lot of offensive coordinators who were like that. The problem with Yurcich is it wasn't working the way he was doing it, and he's got his fastest guy on the bench, so that had to change. And I would not be surprised if Code Unlicky is going to find a way to use Omari Evans a little differently this year, and kind of take advantage of his speed, even when and I think that's good coaching. And I I kind of coaching to me is kind of something that's a lost art a little bit anymore. And I'll say it, even at Penn State, where are they coaching the best? In the weight room. That's where they coach the best. They're turning these guys from really good athletes into elite ones. That's what they're doing. But you're not necessarily always seeing it on the field. I mean, you didn't, did we see it with Chop? Did we see the elite physical skills with Chop in the stat sheet? No, we didn't. Now, did we see it if you watch it on the field? Yeah, you saw him get close to a lot of sacks. But there's been a lot of guys like that who maybe their elite athleticism that was developed in the weight room hasn't necessarily developed into a Carl Nassib-like season. Jason Owe, Chop, Adisa, they didn't have that kind of season where Nassib has 25 tackles for loss and 18 sacks or whatever the numbers are, where he's dominating every play. And you wonder, maybe why that's not happening. I think there's some reasons for it. I think the opposing offensive coordinators have a lot to do with that and game plans and whatever, because, you know, Penn State's got a reputation for that now. But I think if you're coaching, a good coach finds ways to get talented players involved, even when those talented players are a little behind in certain areas. And I think Omari Evans is, I mean, we can go through a list of maybe four or five guys that are like this on this team that maybe could do one thing a little bit better than others, and you use them in those spots. And I think Evans is a guy who Penn State could take advantage of and didn't last year. And he might be the top guy that they had that they didn't take advantage of. So it wouldn't be surprising for me to see him come out in a blue-white game and show that he could really do one thing well, and that is run deep and go get the ball. I mean, you saw it in the Michigan State game.
Yeah.
Drew – and look, they have the quarterback that could throw a deep ball. Drew could throw the deep ball. I mean, and everyone's going to – now email me and remind me about the Peach Bowl, about the affected pass, which was to Evans, I believe. So, I'm going to also remind you about the Michigan State game where he threw the ball 65 yards on a dime and Evans caught it on the run. So, yeah, I think that's a guy who in certain situations can help you. I mean, is he a, you know, third and one when you get it, you got to get 2 yards and you're going to throw the ball in a crazy situation like that? Is he the guy you necessarily going to throw the ball to? No. But there are certain situations where Evans is a useful player. And I think that's where Kotel Nicki kind of comes in. And a big job he's going to have this year is taking advantage of all the talent that you have on the offense. Because you said it earlier about the receivers, and we keep going back to the receivers. They struggled last year. It wasn't because they didn't have talent. They had a lot of talent. Watch Keandre warm up. Keandre warming up is so much fun. He's great. He is a... He does things you never see other receivers do, but then he takes it into a game and it's 3 catches for 31 yards and he looks kind of normal. So yeah, I think that there are some guys like that on in this game that, you know, if they go out and show that, hey, we have this skill that we could take advantage of. And I think they finally have an offensive coordinator who will do that. And I don't think it's as much about his system as it is his system fitting what guys could do. I think his system in a lot of ways is simpler. It's going to look more complicated, but in a lot of ways it's simpler than what Yurcich was running. And I think that benefits a guy like Evans. And, you know, I just think that in a game like this, he's a guy who I could see Evans having 6 catches for 110 yards in this game and a couple of touchdowns. And then maybe in the regular season, it doesn't mean anything. But I think he's a guy that could excite fans in this game. And there are some other guys too out there. Elliot Washington's another one. I've always been impressed by what he does on defense, but he didn't play more than Zion Tracy did or some of the other young guys. And, you know, even Wheatley, I think Wheatley's got a lot to him.
Yeah.
He's a guy who knows how to get in the right position. He's where the ball is. That's a good skill to have. You know, we talked about Lamont Wade last week, but that's kind of a Lamont Wade skill. He's around the ball. The ball finds him. Why wouldn't you want that guy in the field in situations where that benefits you? So I think there's a couple of guys. I mean, you might have a couple others that I missed, but you know, those are the three guys that jump right out to me and that same kind of situation where they maybe offer a little more than they showed last year.
Yeah, I think Wheatley was somebody I wanted to bring up for sure, and I'm glad you did, because you know he was anointed the takeaway king I think 2 off seasons ago, and I do think that showed itself during that season, especially early on in the season. He sort of had a nose for the ball, and I think that's, you know, you could say part of that is maybe the Manny chaos play style defense, but when you look at the spring game, you know, the safety room is you know, all the defensive backs are, you know, they feel young. I mean, even yeah. Jalen Reed is a senior, but he doesn't feel as established as these rooms may have felt in the past. I do think Wheatley too, his skill set is uniquely positioned and uniquely it offers a unique opportunity to wow at the spring game. We could see some fireworks from Zaki, perhaps more likely than even other defensive backs.
You're looking forward to the kicking competition at all. I don't even know how they're going to do this, but there's going to be some kind of kicking feature here to this game. I'm sure they'll get some kids in to kick field goals or whatever, but they really, I think they have to get some of these guys out there. Again, you
Oh, yeah.
mentioned last week, James hasn't settled on a kicker yet, but this feels like Sahadak's last chance. They got a couple of guys, Mayer, they got a couple of guys who could they like Meyer, Chase Meyer, not Mayer, Chase Meyer. Mayer is the other kid. The kid on the walk on Barker. Barker's a kid they like. I think they have three options this year. I don't know how we're gonna see that in this game develop, but I think I'd like to I think that's one position where they're gonna have to tip their hand and show you where they're leaning because somebody's gotta get the first kicks. Somebody's got to get the field goal chance first. And that is automatically going to be where they're leaning.
I think you're right. It's another season, another spring game where the kickers are unknown. And I do think you're right. There's really no sense in keeping this one close to the chest, especially if they're being honest about not knowing what kicker they want to go with. And I do think that competition will be, I don't know, it'll be interesting to watch. But if they don't feel good about anybody yet, I don't know if they're going to feel good about anybody
Yeah.
come Saturday.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be the guy. I just kind of want to see who they feel best about at this point. And I think that's really what the blue white game is about. Who do they feel best about in April? And then we'll reevaluate it in August. And that, I think that's what I kind of have adopted over the years with my blue white game mentality. And I'll try to keep it positive, Sam, this week as you guys follow along from the desk. Sam, thanks so much for joining
Yes.
us this week.
Thanks for having me.
For Sam, this is Donnie Collins. Thanks so much to you all for joining us this week for the Penn State of Football podcast. We'll be breaking down the blue-white game at this time next week, and hopefully you'll join us then. Thanks so much.